Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And Ellie, I am thrilled to announce we have Clementine Ford on the podcast.
Hello.
Hi.
All the way from Australia, just for us, Ellie.
Oh my goodness, thanks so much.
I mean, she's been to Oxford, Shoreditch, other places. But this is the place she wanted to be.
You were like, Catford, that's I want to fly halfway around the world to be in Catford. Is that your dream?
Oxford, Soho, Shoreditch, Catford.
Absolutely.
My itinerary.
Yes.
Right there. I'm just going to go home after this.
I think your job's done, personally. You've arrived here. You're on the Scummy Mummy sofa. Let's do a podcast, Ellie.
Okay,
so we've got Clemmy. Clemmy, Clementine.
I've never been a Clemmy, so...
What about Fordo?
Yeah.
Right, Fordo?
Fordo, that's very Australian.
That's yeah.
Fordo. She's taught me many things about your culture. Yeah. One of them being just put an O on the end of anyone's name and suddenly you're best mates.
So, oh, yeah. Also, if you can make it manly, then... That's it. That's true blue Aussie.
Yeah.
It's white men.
I like it.
That's the only Australian that counts is a white man.
Oh, thank God you've said that out aloud. Anyway, let's get you to describe. Who the hell are you, Clem Ford?
So who am I? I am a feminist writer and speaker from Melbourne in Australia. I've written 2 books. They're both out here now. I'll just give them a little plug. They're called Fight Like a Girl and Boys Will Be Boys. And I'm also a mother to a 3-year-old, beautiful 3-year-old, little precious poppet.
She's saying this now because she's on the other side of the world listening. If she was here now, she may not be saying the same thing.
Oh, put that down. Yeah. Give me that biscuit. Wear your shoes.
Yeah. No, you can't have a snack.
You can't have the microphone. No, go sit in the corner.
That's right. You don't need the toilet. You went 3 minutes ago.
Oh, dear. Oh, you love them so much, don't you? But just not when they're with you.
Yeah, exactly. When they're asleep, I find I'm like in deep love with them. Oh, the precious thing. Oh, yeah. So a little 3-year-old. So you're right in the shit of motherhood then. 3-year-old is quite hard, isn't it?
You know what? I actually don't mind it. I think that there are parts of it that are really hard, but I just really hated the babies. You know, the baby era was, the sleep was shit, the clinginess, like when he was born, because I had a terrible pregnancy, just really, really awful pregnancy anxiety, and I just kept looking forward to the day when he would be separate from me, you know, and I thought he would come out and I could just put him down and, oh, look, you just put him down and go to sleep.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out like that. And he never wanted to be away from me, bless him. Just one of those babies that just always needed to be on me. So I got a baby carrier. I walked around the neighborhood, you know, and I didn't stop working after he was born. So I was walking. I mean, luckily my work I can do at home. But, you know, I was walking around the neighborhood with him in a baby carrier, like typing, writing things out on my phone, writing articles and essays and things like that. And I just found that just the intensity of the baby years was just so full on. Like, I don't have a lot of patience at the best of times. And so now that as soon as he could start walking, everyone's like, oh, watch out when they start walking because they'll never stop. And I just thought it's brilliant that I can put him down now.
See, it's weird, isn't it? Whereas I found that sort of more difficult once they can start walking around and picking up things and like knives and putting their fingers in sockets. I found that quite stressful. But then you get past that and you get to a stage when they can get in the car themselves and put their own seatbelt on. Then you feel like, oh yeah. But that middle bit, I found that quite tough. Because babies, mine didn't sleep either, mind you. That's a bloody nightmare. But, you know.
Oh, did that whole phrase, sleep like a baby...
Yeah, whose baby? Not mine.
Have you met a baby? But also now that he can talk as well, I just find that talking to him is so interesting. And I mean, no one else would find it interesting, but I find it interesting. And that he can communicate his needs just makes everything so much more relaxed between us, you know. Mm. And all of that kind of intensity of the baby years where you think a logical brain, like there's a person inside you, you're watching yourself from a distance. You're watching, like an out-of-body experience, watching yourself completely lose your bundle at this tiny little creature that can't help it. And you're taking it so personally. You're like, why are you doing this to me? Like it's a conspiracy or something. And that little voice that's kind of like hovering outside of you, watching you, is like, calm down. Mm. It's all right. You know, it's just a baby. Just take a deep breath. And you're like, shut up, voice. I wanna scream.
What do they want? I'll do anything. Yep. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. And also, I always thought before I was going to be a mother, I had an idea about what kind of mother I would be. And so you've always got...
Very calm.
Yeah, yeah. And it was easy. I don't know what people were complaining about. It's a tiny human being that you just feed, change, and put down to sleep. But it just not like a
pat on the bum.
Yes. Just tiny. A little bit of a muscle and square. Off we go. Yeah.
No. And, you know, I was one of those mums that slept trained.
Mm.
And that's just, that's a fraught one, isn't it? You know, I'm fully in favour of it, but you mention it to other people and...
Yeah. I think everybody's got their own... No, everyone's got their own...
Are you a fan of sleep training?
I'm not, but I'm not you, and I don't have your child, and you've got to do, you know, sometimes you've got to do what you've got to do to survive, and, you know, otherwise you're no good to anyone, so, you know.
Having said that, you know, I sleep trained in the beginning when he was six months, and then you just sort of go through phases, then... We moved house and he sort of went through another leap and, you know, growth spurt and stuff, and he ended up back in bed. And that was fine for a bit. And then it was taking another 90 minutes of me lying down next to him every night, you know, of a full day of after a full day of parenting. And I'm just thinking, I'm so touched out, you know.
Yeah.
So then I sleep trained again, and now he's three and he sleeps with me every night. So it's... You know, it's not like one of those things where I didn't lock him in a room, you know, and say, no more cuddles for you.
Yeah. See, that's why I can't have a cat, because the way cats are on you all the time, I would end up locking them in a room. That's why I'm not allowed. dreadful animals. But let's get back to the feminism, Clementine. How old were you when you woke up and thought, I know, I'm going to become an international feminist legend? When was that?
Well, it happened just like that. I was one of those people who, you know, I had a very kind of, in lots of ways, privileged middle class upbringing. So I knew that terrible things happened to women outside of my environment. But I had very much absorbed the message that everything was solved.
Everything's fine,
for us, you know. And that feminists were just, they were just complaining about.
They're so cross all the time, aren't they, feminists?
So cross and so angry and ugly.
They hate all men.
They hate all men. And so hairy. The worst thing that you could possibly do was be a man hater. Oh, my God.
Can't wear a bra for shit.
No. Didn't want to shave. Nothing. Probably masturbated. although I was doing a lot of that myself. So, but definitely not telling anyone about it. You know, I was one of those people that was like, well, of course I believe in equal rights, but I wouldn't call myself a feminist.
Oh, when Helen and I hear that, we have a little look. Yeah. We give each other a look, and then we sip our tea.
Ooh. I wouldn't call myself a feminist.
I'm a feminist with a small F. I've never heard that one. Oh, yeah.
Oh, just a little fuck yourself.
Fuck off. Tiny little feminist.
Or my favourite as well. Well, you know, the problem with feminists is that they just want special rights now. And I saw a woman saying this today. You know, feminism shouldn't come at the expense of men. It shouldn't. It's fine for women to want to have rights, but not if they're taking rights away from men. And I just thought, like,
whoever said that?
But also, feminism is not going to happen successfully, and men will be untouched by it. You know, they're not going to go through it completely unscathed by the impacts.
Mm.
Part of it is men losing power.
Yeah, sometimes it's quite good to take a right away. For example, in the olden days, like, used to have the lord of the manor had the right to sleep with, like, the farm worker's new bride on the wedding night. And I don't think it's a bad thing that right was taken away.
Yes.
I would not really want to sleep. I don't know what it'd be. I'd probably sleep with the mayor of Lewisham. I don't know. He probably wouldn't want to sleep with me, to be honest. But, I'm quite glad that I didn't have to do that.
The fact that he could.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even sleep with my own husband on my wedding night, to be honest, too pissed.
Who does that?
Really?
Nobody does that.
We'll save ourselves.
That's all right. Yeah.
So yeah, I did it properly. So
and then I sort of thought to myself, you know, like, oh, I'm not a feminist, because I didn't want boys to not like me. You know, I was terrified that if boys thought that I was a feminist, then they wouldn't want to have sex with me. I mean, they didn't want to have sex with me anyway, but you know, there was a chance, maybe, if I was just nice and polite to them. Anyway, I got to university and realised that was all bullshit and started a gender studies class, became like a fierce, raging femo, sitting on the lawns with all of my other feminist friends, you know, briefly doing everything I could that I felt gave me the markers of feminism. You know, look at my hair under my arms, look at it, look at it, look at it.
changing lies one armpit at a time.
Men can't be feminists. They can be pro-feminists, but they can't be feminists. Let's talk about hegemonic power.
Did you get invited to many dinner parties?
And yeah, so then I just, it kind of just all turned around. But I think actually, so now when I talk about that, it's not so much that I did a gender studies class and I learnt, you know, the correct phrases to use, because I didn't actually really know how to apply any of them properly. I still don't, to be honest. What was the difference was that I formed a network of other women, you know, and I found solidarity and friendship with other women. Because when I was in school, I was also so deeply insecure about what kind of role I fulfilled as a girl, because I didn't, you know, feel pretty. I was too tall. I was too big. I was too blah. You know, it didn't feel like I had the right to kind of say, like, I'm a girl. So I thought that the next best thing, if in fact even maybe the better thing, is to just be friends with all of the boys, because they might want to go out with all of those girls. You know, that sort of like the Taylor Swift, she wears short skirts, I wear t-shirts, you know. The better thing was that they were your friends and that they treated you like one of the guys, you know, that they told you their secrets. And basically now when you look back at it, you're just like, they just used you as, you know, another form of, another step in their learning to use women for emotional labor. So I was like, well, I just don't really like other girls. There's just so much drama. You know, I get on better with boys. I'm just not like other girls really. Which sucked, actually, like when you think back on it, it felt good at the time in a weird way, like in a superficial way. But then when I got to uni and I made friends with all these women and felt like actually I was finally in a room full of people who kind of, I didn't have to just sit there and listen to their stories. You know, they were interested in what I had to say.
Yeah.
But also when you talk to other women, if it's the right kind of women, they're not going to be like, didn't really happen like that. I don't know. That doesn't sound
realistic to me. It's always two sides to this story. Yeah.
I think maybe what happened was this.
Yeah.
And I will explain it back to you in a way that feels comfortable for me, even though I wasn't there, but I think that's probably what really happened. So, yeah, I just kind of like realized the immense power of, you know, forming your own coven.
So what, how would you sort of describe your, would you say you have a Clementine Ford brand of feminism? Have you got a particular angle or a particular, what's your jam?
You know, brand is such a dirty word, but it's true. I do. I think that what I've probably become best known for is, sort of a take no prisoners kind of approach, you know? One of the things I think people associate with me best is the way that I respond to trolls online. So like I screen cap messages that they send me, emails, whatever, and then I'll share them in, you know, on Instagram or on Facebook.
Do you name and shame?
Yeah. Like if there's a name attached, or like I'll attach their profiles to it. And they're always initially, this has been happening again this week with some guy, they're always initially like, yeah, share, see if I care. Like I knew that if I sent this to you, that you'd be putting it on your wall of shame. That's what I wanted. And then within like 24 hours, they're always like, can you please take it down? It's gone on too far now. So I think that like that's been really, really successful, because it's, you know, the way that we've all been raised to fear, you know, the horrible words that men sling at us, that so many women kind of experience it and just shut down, and they like close all their accounts, or they choose not to say the thing next time, or they get really, really wounded by it, which of course, like, it's wounding, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's wounding the first time someone calls you a fat cunt, but it's not really particularly wounding when it's like the 1,000th time. So I feel like that's something that I've been able to do that's been really powerful, or, you know, like galvanizing for women who follow me, that they see me the way that I respond to men and they think, well, I can do that too, you know, not just to abusive fuckwits online, but maybe to the guy at the pub,
yeah,
you know, who's being rude to me or whatever. I mean, within reason, of course, like we always have to take into account our own safety, but
the question I always get asked as an Australian is what is toxic masculinity? And you
it's
are
Australia, that's what it is,
yeah, in a nutshell. And so in within that culture, because I think the portrayal of Australian men outside of Australia is like, oh, he's a good bloke, he's a good Aussie bloke,
yeah,
just bants, bit of fun,
yeah,
that kind of thing. And that's what I grew up with in, you know, country Australia. Oh, he's a top bloke, he wouldn't do anything. And I think what's been really interesting in the last few years, and especially because I follow you on Facebook, all those, I guess, norms have been challenged, and what impact that has not only on our culture but on our young boys and young girls.
Well, I think that still happens in Australia, you know, that he's a good bloke. Oh, he's a bloody good bloke. He would never do anything like that. Oh, no, he's a good lad.
Yeah.
Just made a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we have, as you would know, we have an ex-footballer called Wayne Carey, who is still given, you know, commentating platforms and obviously still has, like, a very lucrative media career. And he glassed his girlfriend 10 years ago, you know. And that's not the only thing that he's even admitted to, you know. He's also got he admitted to I don't know what the exact charge was, but he basically, like, physically assaulted a woman as well outside a nightclub, like, grabbed her breasts and said something derogatory about them. But yeah, he's a good bloke, you know. That was in the past, you know.
Yeah.
Did becoming a mum change your feminism at all, or was it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'd be interested to hear what you guys think as well, but definitely for me it forged it even stronger. Like, firstly, physically, the whole experience of pregnancy and childbirth was just, like, out of this world. I found the childbirth itself, like, was obviously traumatizing and made me even more determined to maintain my fierce, like, commitment to abortion rights. But also just, like, really inspired a lot of rage in me to all of the male legislators who, I mean, apart from wanting to force birth on to people, just don't even understand. They've never taken any time to even bother to be interested in the physiological effects of pregnancy and childbirth on someone's body, you know, that, like, the risks that are posed. 1 in 3 women after giving birth wets themselves.
Yeah.
And that, I remember after, like, 5 weeks postpartum, going to the maternal healthcare nurse and saying, look, I'm just a bit concerned because I've been having some, like, my pelvic floor is quite weak. And, you know, 3 years later, it's mostly recovered in the way that, you know, no one's pelvic floor is probably going to be completely back to what it was.
Yeah. So I'm doing my exercises now. So yeah. I can't stop thinking.
Me too. But I remember saying that to her, and she was very nice, but she just handed me a pamphlet, a government pamphlet that said 1 in 3 women wet themselves after birth. And I was like, oh, okay. That's it then, is it?
Wow.
And so just that expectation that somehow we just, like, have babies and it's not a big deal, you know? Just have the baby. It's no big deal. Women do it every day.
That's right.
Big
deal. It's been like this forever.
So yeah. Oh, you didn't do anything special. You didn't do anything that no one else has done. You're like, well, you didn't fucking do it, mate.
No.
So that, like, definitely brought a new element to my feminism, but also just the gender divide in, you know, like, if you're partnered with a man. I mean, I know that this also happens in same-sex relationships, but it just happened in my case that I was partnered with a man. Just the divide, the domestic workload, and the fractures and the resentments that just build up because, I mean, there's the reality that after the baby is born, for a certain period of time, the birth parent is going to be the one that is called on the most, you know? But it's just, like, the learning for a lot of people doesn't seem to be committed to on the other side, you know? Like, by about 4 months in, I was like, okay, I think I understand this now. I think I kind of feel a lot more comfortable. And so because I was already, like, that far ahead in the learning curve, it was just almost as if, like, oh, well, you know, you've got it, you know? Yeah. And I know that happens for so many women that they just... It just infuriates me that the way that people talk about parenting is that, like, oh, well, fathers and mothers are equal and fathers should be equally valued to mothers. It's like, yeah, I would fucking love that if they actually did the same amount of work.
Yeah.
Like, why is it that women, we have to do so much and yet we still have to check. You know, one of the things that really fucking pisses me off so much now is the, like, the abundance of posts that I see on social media from women praising their husbands, you know. Oh, just like, here's a photo of the most handsome dad in the world. I just want everyone to know how grateful I am for this wonderful man, you know. Just shout out to Richard who, you know, let me sleep in this morning while he took the kids to the park. I just love this man so much, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, firstly, I never, ever see men posting tributes to the women in their lives. They just don't seem to bother to do it. But what is that impulse that's going on there? That why do women feel this strange need to perform this devotion to the outside world, you know? And I think my theory about this is, this might be raising the hackles of some of your listeners, maybe they disagree.
No, but get those hackles up.
No, we like it. Go. We like it. Go. Well,
my theory is that with like very accomplished women in particular, you know, women who like excel in their careers, women who are really smart, women who feel like who really deep down know that actually they'd be fine on their own. That there is this sense that they need to kind of reassure their partner publicly. They need to let him have a little bit of ego in front of other people. You know, yes, I know that I'm like this incredibly accomplished, smart, beautiful woman, but you know, I'm actually really just a big piece of shit and I'm so lucky that you chose to be with me.
Yeah.
Even though you're not doing anywhere near as much as I am to kind of sustain and support this family, I just need to reassure you so that your ego doesn't feel bruised by my successes.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes can get riled up by posts that men do sometimes about their wives, and then they go on to list all the things the woman does, and she keeps this family together and she does this and she works so hard, and I sometimes think, well, why don't you fucking just do it? Yeah. If she works so hard, why don't you take some of the fucking load off?
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of doing a Facebook post about how great she is.
Where the dishwasher out.
Yeah.
The thing is, I don't know if that's a British man thing. I don't even see Australian men doing that, you know. But yeah, exactly. Like, oh, just couldn't do it without her. Well, you're not doing it now, dude.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing a Facebook post. Go and load the dishwasher.
Yeah, and you know, that whole sort of like Mother's Day is the one day of the year where mums get the day off. And you're like,
yeah. What have we become?
Oh, I had the worst story from a friend of mine. So, you know, sorry, this is just briefly touching on the sleep training thing again. She and her partner went to sleep school with their baby when he was, you know, 6 or 7 months old or something like that. And her partner's very hands-on. I mean, he is one of the ones that, like, would post. Mm. So I tell a lie, I've seen him do it.
Yeah.
So he came to sleep school with her because he was like, well, it's, you know, we're doing this together. We're in this together. I'm the dad and I want to be there. And all of the other women, because there's only women who were at the sleep school, they were all like, oh, it's so, what did you have to do to get him to come along? And Lou was like, God. I didn't have to do anything. He wanted to come because this is his child too.
Yeah.
He's invested in the child's sleep. And one of these mums said to her, oh, you know, I had to promise my husband that he could have a golf weekend away in exchange for us coming. And Lou told me, and I was like, but he's at home now and you're
here with the baby,
the sleep school, not on holiday, but at the sleep school with the baby, going through something quite emotionally distressing to help your child sleep so that you don't lose your mind. And he's at home, like, just scratching his balls on the couch.
Yeah.
And in exchange for that, he gets to have a golf weekend.
Yeah. I mean, that seems perfectly fair, really. I mean, he's done a great job. He's let her get out of the house.
You know, and how many women have you seen say things like, oh, I've never had a night away from my children. Their children are like going to university or something. Like, yeah. I've never had a night away from my children. I mean, not that to that extent, but, and it's, you know, sometimes it's just because they've got control issues around it. And then other times they sort of joke like, oh, he'd never be able to cope.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. And the bargaining thing is like, do you remember this, Helen? So in our comedy show, we give the audience cards and pens, right? And we get them to write down like scummy mummy stories.
Mm.
And we had this, we did a Christmas show, I think, and this woman wrote, and it is funny, but it's not funny, but it is funny. On Christmas morning, I let my husband have anal sex with me.
You'd hope, yes.
anal sex with me. And so that the rest of the day, I could sit around and not do all the work because pretending I was in too much discomfort. And like, you're like, fucking hell.
The length.
Oh my God.
Like, so she didn't have to do the potatoes and things like that. We're like, the logic of that, like,
all right, I'll take it up the arse.
Yeah.
And then I might...
I think she did... Actually, I quite enjoyed it, you know, each their own. But, like, yeah, just the idea that you'd have to pretend to be in pain from anal sex to get your husband to top and tail a Brussels sprout.
And that he would upsetting. Be he would be willing to do it because he was so grateful.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so happy. Oh my god, that makes me feel sick.
There's your next book.
There's the anal part about it, you know, like as you said, each to their own. But just the I remember when I was
pregnant. Your work's not done, is what we're saying. Work is not done.
I think she needs to come to all our shows and analyse the confessions.
Yeah.
Oh. We are surprised. So every night we do our show and we go all around the UK and we have thousands and thousands of these Scummy Mummy confessions. So in the last 6 years, we've basically got this incredible snapshot of British motherhood. And like, some confessions are really sad and some are funny.
Yeah, we get, to what else we get quite a lot, we've had a few times now, is I have a gym membership, but I just go there, I pretend I'm going to the gym, but I just have a shower and then I play Candy Crush or, you know, stuff like that, which again is hilarious, but it's also
really depressing.
God, really depressing that as women we have to do that. We have to pretend we're doing some sort of worthy thing because we can't, we feel that we can't say, I just need to go and sit on my own for half an hour.
But the thing is that we don't have to do it.
Right.
You know, and of course, like, there's have to and then there's have to, you know. A lot of women do have to do that in order to get, quote unquote, time off.
Mm.
But we don't have to do that. Like, how do we change the dynamics, not just in partnerships, but how do we change the dynamics in the way that women are conditioned to see themselves so that they're not having to wheedle and negotiate time away just to, like, sit in their car and think for a bit, you know?
Yeah.
Men never have to wheedle and negotiate time away.
Mm.
You know, the amount of men who will say things like, well, when they went back to work after the baby was born, you know, they got to work late, or... You know, or they would say, I'm working late because I would just go and sit in the car and just have a bit of a break, you know? Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Work is your break. Work is your 9-hour break. And then you come home and you start your real job.
Yeah. I remember being, like, weirdly envious of Pete's commute. The fact that he got to sit on a train, or even where we live, stand on a train more likely, and just look at his phone or read a book or listen to music for like 45 minutes without anyone asking for a biscuit or needing a nappy change or having to, you know, I just found that really like, oh, what I wouldn't give for an hour and a half a day where, like,
no one was touching you. Well, on the train there would be, but
but in a nice way.
But
I was going to say, it's just a break from the worry. Like, I just, that parenthood fundamentally changed me. And I used to look at other mums like, why are they so worried? You know, parenthood was fine. But then that fear and that worry overtook me. And, like, when I was with my baby, I was just like, what's going to happen? And even, like, I went a bit mental going, oh, you know, I can't do this. And, like, when I could get out of the house, I just to be free of that sort of worry. But then I'd be...
It's liberating.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely. Well, of course, like, you look forward to it. And then the first few times you do it, you feel like, I just want to be with my baby.
Yeah. You have that withdrawal.
It's terrible sort of... You want to carry the essence of them with you, but just not be... touched
just be out, and then your breast would leak while you're looking around Zara. You're like, I can't do this.
I've got this idea that you know, and it's, some women will find it easier to do than others for a number of different reasons, but so I had to go, I went back to work as soon as my baby was born, and I work for myself, so I could do that because I didn't have to go back to an office. When he was 6 months old, I had to go interstate for the first time. And so that was also partly why we did the sleep training. Well, I say we. Partly why I did the sleep training. Because prior to that, like, he was just breastfed to sleep. And, you know, I would lie down with him every night. And we kind of fell into this pattern where it was assumed that I would just do that work and everything else. And he wouldn't, you know, take the bottle. He didn't, he was a baby that never wanted a dummy or a bottle or anything like that. He just wanted to suck on my tit. And I knew that I had to go away. So I was like, well, we have to do this, you know, I have to, like, figure out how he can sleep by himself and how he can get on the bottle. And look, to be honest, if I just left the house earlier, like when he was younger, and just insisted that he take a bottle, then he would have had to do that. You know, it's the baby, you know, of course, if the boob's there, why are you going to drink, you know, skimmed milk if you've got full cream milk in the fridge, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I went to Canberra overnight when he was 6 months old and was feeling like really intensely kind of panicked about it beforehand. And like on the way to the airport was like, ah! And then as soon as I sat on the plane and the doors shut, and I hate flying,
yeah.
I hate flying. But as soon as the doors shut, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I can have a drink.
Yeah.
I can sit here and I don't, cause I'd flown a lot with him by that stage already, but I was like, I don't have to breastfeed him as we're taking off. I don't have to worry about anyone judging me for having a cup of coffee or like a wine while he's there. I can just enjoy this. And then I went and I, you know, slept by myself for the first time in 6 months. I woke up and my boobs were rock hard, but that was fine. I just like expressed in the shower. And then I came home and I was like, that was amazing. And even though I'd gone for work, it still felt really luxe to like go and sleep in a hotel and have some wine. But I think that like facilitating a new mum to have at least one night away when her baby is like in that first 6 months or definitely the first year is really important. So even if like at a baby shower, instead of saying like, oh, I'm going to, you know, come and buy you all this bullshit that they're going to grow out of, that you don't need because everyone just gives you everything. Get people to come and put like 10 or 15, whatever they would have spent on the baby shower gift, put in a jar while you're pregnant. And then every week, put a pound in or 5 pounds or whatever you can afford, just put it in the jar. And then 6 months in, whatever you've got, say, this is my fire fund. This is my night away fund. And if you've got a partner, then they just have to deal with the baby. Or if you've got family around that can help, you know, or friends or whatever, and you just have to go and do it as hard as it is.
Yeah.
Because the first one is the hardest. And then it gets easier. And I think that
you get a little taste for it, Clem. You get a little taste for it. Establishing distance
from your kids when they're young is like really, really important.
Like before I had kids, I never understood spas. I had no desire to go to a spa. I was like, why would you go to a spa? Whatever. Just don't care.
But have a bath.
More interesting things to do. Don't give a monkeys about spas. And then I had a baby and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then I remember going with Pete to one a few years ago. And we went, it was one of these ones, it was a Centre Parks one where they have the beds, like on the upstairs, they have loads of beds, like water beds and blankets and stuff.
Oh my God.
And we walked round and there was, in each bed, there was like a woman asleep. And Pete was like, why are they all... Why would you pay money to come to a spa and then just go to sleep? And I was like, oh, mate, you if you don't know me by now, you will never, never, never know me. And he said, thank you, Mick Hucknall. Yeah. And but yeah, it's a weird thing, isn't it?
It is. And I've mentioned on the podcast before, but after I had my second child, I got really sick he was about a year old. And I think I just had exhaustion, but they took me to hospital and they thought I had a heart attack.
Oh my god. And you got a break
for 12 hours in a dark room. They put a drip in me and no one touched me. I didn't go to the toilet. Someone just fed, and I was like, oh my fucking god, it's come to this. I've had to be broken. And they were like, no, you, like, it was just a,
that's quite common, you know, like when they go to hospital and they've got kids and they might have like broken a leg or something like that, or they just have to have an extended stay in hospital.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, they're like, well, it sort of sucks being in hospital and being sick, but on the other, they're like, this is an enforced break because my baby can't, like, I actually can't leave the hospital. No one forced me to do it, you know.
No.
Do you know that's also why a lot of new mums either start smoking or take up smoking again, because it's a thing that they can legitimately say, I'm having a cigarette so the baby or the kid can't be near me.
Yeah.
You know, just need 5 minutes.
Yeah. And that's it, literally at the detriment of your health, but it's a break. I know, I didn't smoke for a very, very long time. Like when I went back into comedy, I was like, oh, that's where all the cool kids go outside and I can talk to adults and it just reminded me of my 20s and it reminded me of a Helen that had somehow disappeared. And I was like,
that's so powerful. I started smoking again. I've quit.
Guys, it sounds like you're telling everyone they should start smoking. I've quit again.
I've quit again as well.
But I started smoking again.
Ellie?
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
I started smoking when I was writing the second book again because it was like, partly it was because, you know, then you get 5 minutes to leave the library and go and stand in the street and just...
Yeah.
And also partly because the book is like so traumatizing in parts.
I was like, Jesus.
But also because it made me feel like I was my old self.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've refound some part of me that was like
cool and edgy and, you know, I don't give a fuck, you know.
I hang out in the cool places with the cool people.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I still...
Made me feel sexy, you know, like...
Yes. Yeah. We don't condone
it. Please don't smoke, though, because also it gives you lung cancer and then you die. Okay. Yeah. Good.
But we...
Don't smoke.
Anyway, yeah.
Don't smoke.
All I'm right, going to call this why you should smoke special.
Smoking with Clementine Ford.
But let's, like, so going back to sort of the broader problem of the patriarchy and all this bullshit that we're all having to put up with, how do we change things? And specifically, I suppose, I've got two sons. Mm. They're 4 and 8. And I'm like, how do I raise these children to not be arseholes? And please help me, Clementine, is what I'm saying to you. Yeah.
I get asked that question a lot, and I always have to say, right, disclaimer, my son is 3, and I do not fucking know what to do with him when he's a teenager, you know, because conversely, like, I see in him all of the beautiful potential and possibility of, like, you know, so many little boys are, like, smooshy and cuddly and lovely, and they love their mums, and they just want to be around their mums, and... But when people say things like, oh, boys will be boys, you're like, no, well, actually, boys, when they're little, are... not what you're saying they are, you know. They're conditioned into that in the same way that girls are conditioned into stuff, but the thought that people could just remove themselves from trying to maintain that beautiful, like, intimacy in their sons, or that they would somehow try and, like, beat that out of them, you know.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. That's physically, take that off. Yes.
You know, that's just so sad. And then the other thing as well is that I get asked that question all the time by women. And I never really get asked that question by men. And I know men read my books, but they don't come to, like, sessions with me in anywhere near the same numbers as women. And maybe they don't ask the questions because they feel like it's a space that they want to listen in. I mean, hopefully that's true. But I also just think that they're like, it doesn't even occur to them that maybe that's a question that they should be asking. Maybe that's a responsibility they should be taking on about how they can raise respectful sons. Mm. You know, again, comes back to the domestic divide, you know, even in, like, relatively equal households, the women are probably still doing far more of the, you know, still bearing far more of the mental load. They're still probably taking on far more of the responsibilities, and children see that and they absorb it. And
so we need to model it, but also do we need to, like, I'm thinking, like, practical steps, like, do we need to sit them down and go, right, this is the patriarchy, and let me draw you a picture, and you know, flow charts and PowerPoint presentations, and, you know, what
I actually think that's an amazing idea. You know, I just think that the key to everything is just ongoing dialogue and conversation. You know, you can't sit 15, 16 year old boys down and talk to them about consent for the first time in their lives. You have to talk to all children about consent from the moment that they're born.
Mm.
And when I say talk to them about it, I mean, like, model it and also reiterate it. So, you know, you don't talk to a 3-year-old about sexual consent because that's weird.
Yeah.
But you do say, you know, can I give you a hug?
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
I think Philippa Perry has a bit about, like, never make a child... give another relative a kiss or a cuddle.
Oh, no, I feel really yucky about that, and tickling.
So I always say with my son, can I give you a cuddle, you know, or can I give you a kiss, and listen to what he says. And then if he tells me to stop, then I'll stop immediately, and then I'll repeat it back to him. I'm stopping because you've asked me to stop. And when someone says stop, you have to stop.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we've started doing now as well, which my adult friends are doing with him, is saying to him, like, if they're saying goodbye, they say, like, do you want a hug? Or do you want a high five? Do you want a fist bump? Or do you want a little dance? And then he gets to decide how they say goodbye. And like, mostly he says, you know, dance or fist bump.
Yeah.
It's like a fun thing for them to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really nice way to kind of give children power over their own bodies as well. And
yeah. No, exactly. And also about, like, reading, like, my kids are getting a bit older, and sort of reading what they see in film. But yeah, my son watched Top Gun at a friend's house, and then he came back and he said, oh, mummy, when you kiss, you've got to do this wiggly thing. And, like kissed me on the arm, but kind of went, oh. I said, no, that's not how we kiss. But he'd seen a portrayal of kissing that he hadn't seen before. And we had to chat about, no, that's a, you know, when you grow up and love each other very...
Although also it's a special hug.
Yeah, exactly. Magic cuddle.
Magic cuddle. Is
So all the ala. And especially with things like porn and stuff, they all kind of like, how do you... yeah, navigate what that all means and things like that.
How old are your children?
Nearly 11 and 8.
Yeah, because the average age for boys to watch hardcore pornography for the first time is 11.
Wow. Yeah. So I'm getting into that zone, Ellie.
Yeah. I'm going to just... Hang on, I just have to cut all the cables in my house and pair of scissors quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really scary thing because it's just... It's inevitable almost that that's going to happen. And I find... I'm really distressed by that. Not just because what's it teaching them about what sex looks like.
Mm.
But also because I think that most... I think you would say most, if not all, 11-year-olds whose first experience of sex is watching hardcore porn for the first time, that is not actually something that they'll be okay with, you know? Mm. I think that a lot of... You know, they might be watching it with their friends or they might be watching it out of curiosity, but I think that stuff would be pretty scary if you were seeing it for the first time and you had no concept of what sex was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was jazz mags when we were 11, but that's a bit different, you know.
It's a difference to see, you know, just a nice pair of tits.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
To getting,
So... do you ever sort of lose hope? Like, do you ever wake up and just think, God, right, Donald Trump's the president of America and, like, porn and then, like, all these cases you hear about, like the girl in America who was raped by that guy and then he just got let off with a, you know, what was
the I just got back from Belfast this morning where the Ulster rape trial happened as
Oh,
God.
So, yeah, so do you ever just kind of wake up and go, I don't know that we're going to beat this thing. I don't know... Or do you just have to keep going? Do you just have to keep fighting?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, like anyone, I have days where I feel really despairing. And, you know, the thing about... This is the naive sort of Pollyanna in me, that when Trump won the election... I mean, yes, we can say that it's a fact Trump won the election because people are racist. And, you know, they love that Trump just says whatever he wants and it gives them permission and license to say whatever they want and they just love the spectacle of it, you know? All of the pop culture that we grow up with celebrates heroes and celebrates, like, the bad guys losing. And yet everything that people are willing to kind of cheer on indicates that they're not on the side of the goodies.
No.
They're on the side of the baddies. Mm. Like, you know, all these people now who, support the system, they would be the stormtroopers.
Yeah. I was literally about to say, I feel like I live in the end of the Empire Strikes Back. Like, that's where I feel like I'm at. And I just keep having to hold on to the fact that hopefully Return of the Jedi is coming. We're all going to go and live in some sort of nutty centre parks with a load of teddy bears. It's going to be all right. Please tell me that's what's going to happen. Yeah. Is it going to be all right?
I mean, it's really, really distressing to see that people... In their kind of like pop culture, love the idea that they would be a rebel and that they would challenge the man and like disrupt the system. But in reality, they're like, nope, you've got to follow the rules, and they broke the rules, and that's really fucked. But I also think, you know, so again with the Belfast thing, I was told that the day after the verdict was handed down, and of course all of the defendants were found not guilty. And the response to that was, you know, the woman's left Belfast now because why would you stay there? Also, her details were released because people were in the trial and they were, like, taking photos, I think, and, you know, released her name. But after all of that, the day after the verdict, there was a huge rally in Belfast and, you know, thousands of people came out to protest this verdict. And from what I was told from some of the women that I met in Belfast last night, you know, who've been attending feminist rallies in Belfast for years, they saw people there that they've never seen come out, you know, these faces they don't know, because it was a case that really deeply affected people. And I found that really encouraging, you know, that I think that as slow as and as glacial as the progress we're making seems to be, and as big and toxic as the backlash is, more and more people are becoming aware of the dynamics of men's violence against women and rape culture and misogyny and patriarchy. And so even though it feels despairing to us, and even though it feels like the progress is moving so slowly, and even though the reality is that probably it won't happen in our lifetime, we all have to hold on to the fact that what we're doing now is an essential part of the process.
Right.
You know, that again, like in
so the goal should not necessarily be to completely fix the problem, but to be a part of the ongoing solution.
Just to know that the problem won't be fixed in a few years, and so therefore it won't be one generation that does it. You know, they're in Northern Ireland, finally on October 21st, abortion is going to become legal, all things going according to plan. And there are women long dead in Northern Ireland who fought really, really hard to make that happen. And they never lived to see the day. And, you know, same with women in Ireland who never lived to see the day. They were an essential part of that process in the same way that any activist now is an essential part of the process. We're all part of taking, you know, dismantling the system and taking out their own, the little bits of the system that we can ourselves. And one day someone's going to take the last piece out, and it has become the last piece that they could take out because of the pieces we're removing now.
Mm. And hopefully, because this is how I'm going to raise them now, that person will be one of my sons. That's the dream. Excellent.
Yes. Excellent.
Feminism done.
Yes.
Solved.
Good.
Solved.
Excellent.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, from one light topic to another, climate change.
Yeah, let's change that.
While we're putting the world to rights, let's do a bit of climate change chat. Are you how concerned are you about the fact the world is simultaneously melting and going on fire? I'm quite worried.
Yeah, I'm pretty bloody scared of it, to be honest. Although, you know, but on the other hand, sometimes when I'm having really, really, you know, horrible bouts of anxiety, it actually makes me feel a little bit better to think, well, we'll all be dead in the climate wars soon.
Death is coming.
You know, when you're like, how can I live with this anxiety for the rest of my life? Oh, well, it probably won't be that long.
Don't have to.
No,
yeah.
No, it's fine.
Seas I'm really bloody scared. It's terrifying to think of our children living in a Mad Max style future, you know, like to like find a tiny little precious bottle of water to give to my son on his 21st birthday. Here you go, darling.
That's right. Or we could just have
pills. I paid $500,000 for it.
There was a thing shared last night about Kerry O'Brien, who's a guy in Australia, and he said, when I was a journalist in the 1980s and 90s, I was talking about then, and no one listened. And they're saying exactly the same things 20, 30 years ago, and no one listened. And now we're at this crazy tipping point where it could be at the point of no return. Who knows?
Oh, look at Dennis Quaid in The Day After Tomorrow. Exactly.
Exactly right. What is interesting, we're not all despairing. The bad guys aren't essentially winning because there's been an uprising. There has been their children, like we've got your Gretas of the world, have kind of going, don't fuck this up for me. I mean, you have fucked it up for me. You've got, you know, the big summit that was in New York and our dreadful Prime Minister from Australia was there and all slagging off this 16-year-old girl who's trying to
affect... They're terrified of her, aren't they?
Absolutely. Mm. And I think that's sort of this amazing kind of thing. It's not just about climate change. It's about this. It is about the patriarchy. It is about... Mm. This young, strong girl. He's not behaving like a 16-year-old girl. She's not coquettish. She's not being pretty and flicking her hair. She's fucking angry. Mm. And she's pointing the finger at them.
I find it hard not to feel hopeless, you know, when you're washing out your yoghurt pots, like you're supposed to, turning off the lights, and then you look at the emissions coming out of these fucking factories all over the world, and,
dumping
stuff in the sea.
Yeah. It's 100 companies in the world that are responsible for over 75% of... the world's emissions. And also in Australia, where, and someone could correct me on this, but my understanding is that because we used to basically just ship all of our recycling to China for them to deal with, and they've essentially said now, no, not doing it anymore. So we're still recycling, but where does it go?
But then do we give up though then, or do we, like, as we were saying before, do we go,
well, we've just got to chip away. We've just got to chip away and go, okay, maybe this particular tiny thing won't make the difference, but maybe if everybody does a tiny thing, eventually over time it will make a difference.
And it's about how we choose our, or I guess how we choose to spend our money, how we choose to spend our holidays, how we, all those sort of things that we, it's that, like that tiny shifts that make that change. Well, we hope so, but essentially we've got to make sure that the people in charge actually give two shits about whether we live in 10 years time or 20 years time.
But to be fair, some companies are trying to make an effort, which brings me neatly, Helen, to our sponsor for this podcast,
so co-op. Neatly, I love these guys. I love the co-op. Do you know why?
Great bunch of lads.
There's one near my house,
right?
So I don't have to drive.
Yeah,
win. And they are being great guys and girls because they're using recyclable materials and they've got a big aim.
Yeah, I think you'll find, Helen, that they've replaced the bags with compostable bags.
Ooh,
I know.
I know.
That's piqued her interest.
Yeah. Do you want some more fun facts?
I love fun facts.
I wish I lived near the co-op.
Yeah.
I know, right? All the bases of their pizzas are now cardboard. Yeah. All the straws, their co-op straws, are paper.
Yes.
And this blew my mind, lads. Yeah. They are working on a biodegradable tea bag. I'll be honest, I did not know tea bags were not biodegradable. I've been chucking them in the compost. Well,
can they not go in the compost?
Well, I don't know, but they're working on a biodegradable one. That's all we need to know.
I love these guys. And their margarita pizzas, I will say, are fantastic.
Excellent.
So I'm only going to buy their pizzas. But I think they're doing a great job, Billy.
Yeah, yes. And they did this thing at Glastonbury where they sold sandwiches in entirely compostable packaging.
Yeah.
So, because I think festivals are a big thing, because we were at the Edinburgh Festival this summer and we were walking around looking at all these posters and flyers, including our own. I'm not, you know.
No, we were part of the problem, Billy.
But we were thinking, my God, like, and all the plastic glasses from the outside beers and, like, just the footprint of that festival must be
insane.
Extortionate. Yeah. And they had recycling bins, but, like, you could see people had just chucked any old shit in there, like. Mm.
So, yeah. So that's a good thing they're doing. And they had a deposit and return scheme where they would get people to bring back their plastic and then they recycled it. So that was good.
Well, you know, that's something, isn't it? That's a reason to be cheerful.
Fucking yes. You want to support the good guys.
Yeah.
I would, in all seriousness, definitely want to shop there because I just think, you know, you go to the deli counter and obviously we shouldn't be eating meat either, but you go to the deli counter to buy your meat at the supermarket and they always wrap it in plastic and paper. And I always say, I just, you know, no paper at least, just put it in the plastic.
Yeah.
And I always think to myself that I should bring my Tupperware. But I checked with my local deli counter and they said, oh, even with that, we're like, just based on food hygiene rules, we have to wrap it in the plastic. And then when I was flying to Belfast yesterday, I hadn't flown internally in the UK yet. And I was astonished at the fact that you have to put all of your toiletries in the little plastic glad wrap bags.
Yeah.
I thought there must be millions of those a year that just get chucked.
That's it. And you could just put them in the, literally put them on the tub and go, look, there's my lipstick, there's my foundation.
Ask people to bring their own little paper bags, you know?
I know. They've got an X-ray machine, Clem. That's
why, if we start with the airports.
Yes. Close that down.
Anyway, co-op is a good idea.
Yes, there we are. I think they're great.
Yes, excellent stuff.
I actually bought one of their ready meals today because I was running late for this podcast and I got one of their lovely ready meals wrapped in the cardboard and it was very delicious. So it was very handy for me.
Well, there we go.
Thanks.
Thanks, the co-op.
Thank you.
Well, that's climate change done as well. I mean, we've just solved all the world's problems, basically.
I feel very smug.
Yes. Now, to finish up, Clementine, we usually have a scummy mummy confession. Have you got one you might share with us?
I just got a text from my nanny saying my son may have watched something inappropriate on the internet. That's pretty scummy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is like a live scummy mummy confession.
I know.
Oh, my God. What was it?
She said something. He said he's just seen something very inappropriate. Just a bit worried what he'd seen. Sorry to worry you.
What?
Didn't want to not say anything.
What? No! You have worried me! It's like me! I'm worried! What has he seen? I must know. Text her back now.
Did he watch some Jeremy Vine?
I don't know.
Oh, dear.
Scummy Mummy. I don't know if I've got a singular confession. I don't know. Look, to be honest, I've been a completely 100% perfect mother. So
I would believe that. You're a beacon for all mothers.
I do have him rewear his socks all the time.
This is not
Scummy Mummy. I think this is a good trick, actually. But yeah. I worry, I guess, that it's going to create unhealthy habits later on. But I've got a pineapple, like a sort of a plastic pineapple with a lid on it in my kitchen. And I've come up with an entity called the Treat Witch. My son named her and her name's Lally. And the Treat Witch comes whenever I need him to do anything.
I love this. This is a nice
little... So I'm bribing him, basically. Yeah. But, you know, do what you're going to do, particularly when you're a single mum.
Oh, well, what a sort of emotional journey this has been to.
I know. It's been exciting times.
Yes.
Not only because I want to know what my son has watched on the internet.
She texted you back. I really want to know.
We'll find out. It's because it's on, what's it called, Airplane. Do you want me to text her back?
I really want to know. I'm so excited.
Did he watch?
What's it going to be?
I don't know. I know my friend...
Nuremberg rallies, clips. Don't know. Just don't know. What are your books called?
My first book's called Fight Like a Girl. My second book is called Boys Will Be Boys. And you can find them in UK bookstores if your local bookstore
doesn't have it. Thank God, because I was just about to ask. Where can you find your book?
If your local bookstore doesn't have it, then ask them... to order it in.
Yeah.
I'd rather people ask their bookstores to order it in than order on Amazon.
I'm really sorry.
if you want to see me clapping back to trolls online, you can follow me on Instagram as well. My username is just Clementine_Ford. Come and follow me there.
Just wanted to say thank you to all our listeners who support us throughout all of this. And we're going on tours all the time, aren't we, Ellie?
Yes, go to scummymummies.com. We've got the autumn tour. We're sort of kicked off now. We're doing a Christmas show as well. So, yeah, it's going to be good times. Our book is
still in print. Yeah.
And you can follow us on the social media at Scummy Mummies.
That's about it, really.
I think we're done. I think,
yeah,
you know.
Fuck the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Fuck it. Dick.
Yeah. Dick. Refreeze the ice caps. Okay. Thank you so much, Clementine.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so great to be here. I'm so thrilled.
Oh, it's been fab. Thank you. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It might have been Top Gun that he was... He thinks everything's inappropriate. He's quite innocent.
So he told her he thought it was inappropriate.
Okay. You may not want to put this on the point. He said, hey, Hugo said something a bit concerning about inappropriate films. He said he was sharing a bed with you at Disneyland and that he had seen something very inappropriate in films about that sort of thing. Just a bit worried where he had seen that. Sorry to worry you, kiss.
Oh, my God. He thinks he's going to go to Disneyland and sleep with his mother. Is that what she's saying? Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Well, there we go. That is a podcast first. A live Scummy Mummy confession unravelling as we record. That is absolutely top.
She's seen the text. I've got the two double ticks.
That's top draw, that.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.